The Guardian.
Did you miss us? I'm Matt Wells. This is Media Talk, back after our summer hiatus. Coming up this week, Red Hot TV, Television X, and now Channel 5 as well. Could Richard Desmond's offer to take over Britain's fifth terrestrial TV channel be too good for RTL to refuse? Also in the podcast.
Everyone has an off day. Of those shows we did, I would say there's only a handful that I'm actually ashamed of. And the BBC have supported us and shown us a great degree of leeway, and I leave with nothing but fond memories and gratitude.
It's goodbye from him as Ross finally departs the BBC, just as Culture Secretary Jeremy Hunt puts the licence fee in his crosshairs. And
there's nothing like this for men out there. We absolutely aren't doing gimmicky stuff like gadget reviews, and there's nothing about football in it. You know, if we have a sportsman on, they will be talking about something interesting like bringing up kids.
Move over Jenny Murray, Radio 4 and 6 music presenter John Holmes, tells us about life on the other side of the glass as producer of Men's Hour on 5 Live. It could only be Media Talk from The Guardian. Well, it's been about 6 weeks since we last met, and in the words of a particularly clumsy bear in a china shop, sorry for the huge pause. plenty more where that came from. Now, this week, the former proprietor of the Daily Telegraph, Conrad Black, was told that he's being released from prison following 3 years inside for fraud and various other bits of naughtiness. And here to ensure that my confinement in the pod is anything but solitary, I'm joined by a couple of media minds. Maggie Brown is a Media Guardian columnist and the official biographer of Channel 4. Have you been keeping yourself busy, Maggie?
I have been keeping myself very busy. In what way do you mean?
Well, professionally or socially?
Yes. Yeah. I've been hobnobbing with, Melvin Bragg, all sorts of exciting things.
Oh, good. Well, we'll have to hear about that. Yes, okay, great. The Guardian's head of media and technology is here too, Steve Busfield. I see that you're back from your World Cup jolly that we read about on Twitter.
Yes, I had a very nice time in Johannesburg and a very nice time at Glastonbury.
Yeah, you get all over the place. Is it at your expense or are you on a professional capacity?
I have spent a lot of money on those trips.
Yeah, I thought you probably had. Excellent. We'll catch up with... So the Guardian can't afford to send you. We'll catch up with all the latest media news we've missed over our summer break a little later. But what a week it's been for British broadcasting. RTL could be hours away from selling Five with, goodness, God help us, Richard Desmond, the most likely buyer. Meanwhile, Melvin Bragg has announced that he'll be reviving the recently culled South Bank show on Sky Arts after 33 years on ITV. And over the weekend, Culture Secretary Jeremy Hunt said the licence fee could be cut as part of the government's public spending austerity drive. Maggie and Steve, BBC and Lord Bragg in a moment. But first, Richard Desmond, what does he know about running a TV channel with the occasional bit of nudity on it?
Well, I mean, he, I assume, will reach for a professional. Either he keeps Dawn Airy or he hires somebody else. But the second thing he does know about is making money out of failing media assets. He's prepared, I think, to cut things to the bone. On top of that, he has a very, very acute sense of the value of celebrities, as we know, and the value of advertising. So the key to whoever takes over Channel 5 is they have to find a way to make its 8% share of advertising, which is so small in the television market, somehow it's got to increase, but they've also got to stop being squeezed and squashed by the rivals.
They've got to decide what Channel 5 is all about. Is it the fifth terrestrial channel or the number one digital channel? You know, what do they want to be?
Well, I mean, it still has that very small window when it's still one of the big five that most people can get. Although, bizarrely, my mum, who lives in one of those black spots, only actually even gets four channels and doesn't even get Channel 5. But, I mean, as professional journalists, we sort of, we worry about what's happened to The Express and what has happened to the values and the quality of it. But he has made a lot of money out of it. I'm not sure that people are necessarily going to quite worry so much about Channel 5's quality, as it were. But he will. I'm fairly certain that if the deal goes through, that he will make money out of it. And it'll be interesting to see how much cross promotion and how much cross production there is with his celebrity magazines.
Television X? No.
Yeah. Well, if you remember, Five launched, it had the special adult zone.
After Jack
Doherty.
The Witch Diaries.
Yes, and do you remember it? But it did for a couple of years really market itself as this very edgy kind of adult channel. And then Kevin Ligo came in 2000 and sort of said enough of that and brought us Culture and Arts at 7 o'clock. And Tim Marlowe, so cleaned it all up. I think also the other thing you have to look at here is that Channel 5 hasn't really been marketed properly. I mean, it's had the most terrible inheritance, being the last terrestrial channel launched in 97, just as the digital revolution was taking off, when already the satellite had 10% of the audience. So it's had a very a tricky birth. It's had a very difficult 13 years, to be honest with you. And now we have the owners who don't want to invest further in its programming.
So at least it'll be owned by somebody who wants to own it. That is a start.
And also we are told that he wants to take over the licence commitments. So it is a minor public service broadcaster, but it does still provide news commitments. Yes, and children's television. Don't forget Milkshake. I mean, one of the great sort of little, you know, jewels of children's television in this
country. What about Desmond himself as a sort of fit and proper, you know, let's put our Guardian hats on, as a fit and proper person to run a television channel? What do you think about that?
Well, he's allowed to run newspapers. Yeah. I don't think there's any question that it will be allowed to happen. Mm. I mean, you know, the only proviso for this entire conversation is that we're having this conversation and it hasn't happened yet. Mm. I can't see that RTL are in a position. I mean, RTL want the money. They want to get rid of Channel 5, and he is the most serious bidder. And Channel 4, who are still in there, I think, mostly seem to have been doing it so that they don't end up with somebody they don't want.
Yes, they were. I was at the summer party this week, and I was sort of cut dead when I tried to ask about the position they were taking, which means I think that they're pretty sensitive about it. And I think all the time, if you look at the deal they did with UKTV, they're really trying to protect themselves in the advertising market, so they're of a certain scale up against ITV's 49%. And I can see some justification. I mean, you know, it is quite sad, Channel 5, because there are... I've just been reviewing it over the past couple of days, looking at
You're
the history.
You're writing a biography of Channel 5 as well, are you?
There's actually a very good
You're
history. There's a very good history. It goes up to about 2003. But one of the interesting things is, it's very easy to laugh about it, but it did actually bring Kirsty Young to the screen as a different kind of...
News broadcaster.
It did produce some interesting...
There's popular documentaries. And popular arts as well.
Popular arts with Tim Marlowe. And of course, it also did The Gadget Show, which has spun off into a big live event. So, and at the moment, Don't Stop Believing would be a hit.
I love Don't Stop Believing.
Yes, it would be a hit on ITV. But there again, they've had to go to an advertising sales house, Group M, part of WPP, to get the funding for it, because they just do not have any funds for original programs.
And you know they're doing it in Maidstone? They're doing it at the Maidstone Studio in Kent, and they've got what's the name that's fronting it? That old
Emma Bunton.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah,
I quite like their news as well. I mean, I think there is a sort of, you know, that 2 minute news thing is a thing that gets people watching news who really wouldn't watch it otherwise.
There we are. Guardian positive about Channel 5 shock. Enough about Channel 5, I think. Let's switch channels to BBC. Inevitably, the Conservatives have begun to talk about the, quote, extraordinary and outrageous waste at the corporation. In an interview over the weekend, the Culture Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, said that next year's licence fee settlement should see a significant squeeze. It's interesting that he did this in The Telegraph and not the Murdoch Press. Preaching to the choir, Steve.
Yeah, and, you know, and if it had been in the Murdoch Press, then everybody would, you know, immediately have jumped up and down and said, it's Murdoch and the Tories in bed together picking on the BBC. Mm. I think the Tories are quite capable of picking on the BBC all on their own. Yes. The fact that, you know, the fact that a major media owner supports that campaign is by the by.
How does the BBC play it, Maggie? Because, you know, this is serious business, isn't it?
It's very serious business. I think a lot is riding on Mark Thompson's McTaggart lecture at the end of August.
At the Edinburgh TV
Festival. He will then be addressing the agenda, which really was set by James Murdoch when he called the BBC almost out of control and having this huge chinning effect on the market. The second thing
is, of course, that the BBC is so politically weak at the moment, isn't it? Because of everything from Jonathan Ross to executive pay.
Well, my personal view is that it would have been far better and cleaner if they had cut top executive pay last year by 25% as they cut the top talent, or tried to get them to cut, because that would have taken a lot of the wind out of this sales.
And then there's a story about, you know, Mark Byford's pension packet being more than, you know, an enormous amount of money.
I think that even the friends of the BBC, and I was talking to quite a few of them this week, cannot defend some of aspects of executive pay, of an organisation being almost captured by its top managers, having very little movement in those managers. When they appoint somebody to a proper job like Radio 4 controller, she takes a 20% cut. The person appointing her has taken an 8.3% cut. It all looks a bit out of kilter with the current mood. So on the other hand, you have to say that the programming is not half bad.
Okay, well, we'll see how that plays out. I mean, one interesting thing, of course, is that there is slack in the licence fee at the moment. You know, there is the digital switchover fund, which was taken to fund older people switching to digital television. That's in surplus. So the government could say, we're cutting the licence fee, but actually not cut the amount of money that the BBC receives, couldn't they?
It could, and we await to see what they actually do after all of the posturing.
Yeah, well,
we have a couple of... I mean, it's more than a year, so 18 months, really.
All right, well, plenty more time to talk about that then. South Bank Show, quite the scoop for Sky, but no longer on free-to-air TV. This is more interesting positioning by Sky, isn't it, Maggie?
Well, I can tell you that actually we're going to see more of this, because Sky has realised that if its sports channels can be retailed by its rivals, then it will have to adjust its image and say, but we've got everything else. And so the Sky Arts channel is just one aspect of that, but I'm told that in January they will start a new marketing campaign which will emphasise the breadth of the Sky offering.
That it's not just football and sport.
And that it's about really every kind of passion or interest that you might have. Having said that, it is incredible really that ITV could be so cavalier with one of its great brands and one of its great presenters. I mean, the BBC, in a way, has people like David Attenborough who are allowed to go on into their 80s because the audience love him. They know he's not going to be toiling up, you know, Mount Kilimanjaro to hug a gorilla, but they know people know his voice and they respect his passion.
Yeah.
Now, ITV actually has that with Melvin Bragg, somebody who had it. And I, if I had been running ITV,
they'd still be doing Opera and Glyndebourne
if I was the new lot there, I would have actually saved Melvin Bragg and the South Bank Show. I think it would have been a fantastic move by Adam Crozier to say, you know, this far, but no more.
Mm. What are you going to say, Steve?
Do you really think that Melvin Bragg is in the same league as Attenborough? That Attenborough makes these shows that are watched by lots of people and are sold around the world, and he is regarded as a national treasure. And you know, and Melvin Bragg certainly regards himself as a national treasure. But does the rest of the country? I mean, South Bank Show wasn't watched by that many people. It had sort of got an agenda that people had sort of wondered where it was going. It wasn't, you know, it was sort of becoming populist. It was, you know, becoming almost a bit like, you know, I don't know, Alan Yentop doing the arts.
Yeah. Well, listen, as many people have noted on the blog, this is one comment. Given the fact that Sky is based in Isleworth, maybe it should be called the North Bank Show. Yeah, okay. That's enough of broadcasting. If you want to give us your feedback, our blog is at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. I'm Matt Wells, this is Media Talk, and a big hello to all those lovely people we met. We were at a summer party this week, it was something else. Very nice canopies, roof garden, yeah, very good. Now, we thought we'd do something a little different for our news and brief section. Maggie and Steve, producer Ben has lovingly put together 8 sound clips to illustrate 8 of the other big media stories from the last month and a bit. So this is our catch-up section, okay?
To work out if we've been paying attention.
Yeah. In a format not at all borrowed from Mock the Week, Have I Got News For You or the News Quiz, we're going to play the clips, and then you need to tell us what the story is. And the more elements you get right about the story, the more points you accumulate.
Maggie, I've been watching the World Cup.
And as everyone knows, points mean prizes. So without further ado, here's the Media Talk Tombola of News. that's a quiz sound effect that I composed and played myself. No, it's not actually. So what you have to do is you have to choose a number from the Tombola of News. Mm-hmm. So pick a number.
Okay.
What have you got, Maggie?
I'm number eight.
Number eight. Okay, listen to this.
I'm not a morning person, so I'm quite happy where I am in the one show at 7 o'clock.
Oh, that's Christine Bleakley.
Yeah, so well.
Moving to ITV.
Moving to ITV Daybreak.
This is the story about Christine Bleakley, who withdrew, the BBC withdrew that £450,000 contract after it emerged that she wanted to go. She was in discussions with.
Well, she was sort of teetering on the brink and never actually jumping.
What did you make of that story?
I think it's a bit odd, really, that the BBC managed to alienate such a successful presenting pair. But I wish them luck in ITV.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, I think they'd also got a big for their boots. Yes. I mean, Adrian Charles throwing a hissy fit because Chris Evans was going to do Fridays on The One Show when he was already doing Match of the Day on Sundays and The One Show all the way through the week. Wouldn't you just be pleased to get a night off?
No, because we're not stars. We don't. That's the way they behave. And in fact, that's why he left, because he thought, I'm not going to give up anything to that Chris Evans.
But also good for the BBC, because they could have got into a bidding war, and how much of a kicking would they have got
Absolutely.
If they'd started paying over the odds for Adrian Charles.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Next one.
Is that a 6 or a 9? It's 1 to 8?
It's 1 to 8, so it'll be 6.
So it'll be a 6.
Number 6.
Have in my hand a piece of paper with the results of the report. So I'm just going to read this out now, and that's going to be it. Okay. The BBC Trust has rejected the BBC's plans to close 6 Music. In his initial response...
Not a difficult one. this is after the big... Twitter campaign, BBC Trust stepped in, and quite unexpectedly, I think, Steve, they were quite categorical about it. They didn't kick it into the long grass. They didn't call for review. They said, absolutely, it's to be saved. What did you make of the decision?
Well, I mean, there had been an enormous campaign to save it. Yeah. There had also been the realisation that actually it was one of those things that the BBC does and that nobody else does. And there's also the strange sort of politics of the BBC Trust and the Tories at the moment, where the BBC Trust are trying to show that actually they can stand up to BBC management, and they can, they can say, no, you mustn't cut the costs by getting rid of that service.
But also, A, it wouldn't have cost very much to cut. B, it wasn't a cut overall anyway, because the money was being reinvested. And C, the 6 Music doesn't make any difference to the commercial marketplace anyway, and commercial rivals didn't care two hoots about it.
What it showed, actually, was that the BBC's, at the very top level, didn't really understand the relationship radio stations have with their listeners. There is this sort of intimacy, and a lot of people had decided they really liked that show, and they couldn't get it anywhere else, so they wanted their fix to continue. That's the kind of passion. Now, Jenny Abramsky, who used to run BBC Radio,
she would have
understood that
yes.
straight away.
Yeah, all right. Maggie, pick a number.
Oh, help. All right. I've got number 5.
Number 5.
Once upon a time, there was a kingdom, and for many years it was ruled by 2 powerful kings, but the kings wouldn't have been in power without a third man, and people called him the Prince of Darkness. I don't know why.
Yes, this is
a fairy tale.
This is a slightly bleak one. Yes, it is Peter Mandelson, but that's not the story. That's not the story we're talking. We're using him to illustrate
Time's Paywall.
Excellent. Yes, there we are. Points to you. So the paywall's up.
Oh, hang on, I was going to say that. Oh, I don't mind. I'm
it's
not competitive.
You need to be quick on
it. Sorry, I thought I had all the time in the world.
Quick on the buzzer. So the paywall is up, and as expected, numbers are down. You know, there's some dispute or discussion about.
There's a lot of discussion about that. About how many people are going behind the paywall, we've actually got a piece running on the site at the moment, written by Peter Robbins, which is sort of saying, these things don't happen immediately. You aren't going to get an enormous amount of money, and it's not just about the web money that they get. It's also about about the money they make from the newspaper. And the interesting thing about the Mandelson story was that they sold 35,000 extra copies of the Times on the first day of the serialisation.
Yeah, cost them £350,000 though.
Yeah, but they were bumped up all week. So they have made some return for it.
And they also
said, if you want to get this stuff, you're going to have to pay us to get it.
And it's
could
not
go
as
to
if
these
they,
events yes. as well, couldn't you all around if you wish to see them.
Well, they had Mandelson events all around the country.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's not as if they didn't know that this was going to happen. They knew they were going to lose.
It's a marketing ploy. Yeah. It's a form of marketing.
Yeah. So I think you're right, Steve. It'll we shouldn't be too sniffy about it, and we should see what happens in the long term. But I do want to ask about Will Lewis, the ex-Telegraph editor, of course, because he's now been taken on at News International in a senior role. He's become a chief lieutenant for Rebecca Brooks, her new group general manager. What do you make of that, Steve? Is that...
Well, I mean, the intriguing thing about Will Lewis's departure from the Telegraph was that he was in Euston with a special project trying to work out how to make money for the Telegraph online. Mm. And you know, nobody really knows whether he'd found an answer or not. He certainly, there certainly hasn't been one yet from the Telegraph. So he's gone across to the Times. He's either taking those ideas with him, or, you know, or being forced to leave them by Murdoch MacLennan. I should imagine he's probably taking the ideas with him. And, you know, and it's interesting that Brooks has brought him in because, you know, because she's a newspaper expert and she's really not an internet expert. Mm. And, you know, and that's how Will markets himself.
Right, OK, well, we'll see what happens there. Back to the tombola. Stick your hand in my tombola.
Number one.
Number one, please.
Will play.
It's been a remarkable period of my TV career being here at the BBC. And the experience I've had here with the BBC has been just a blessed one. I've been very lucky. I felt very honoured. Sometimes the papers might have made me out to seem a bit arrogant and a bit kind of out of control, but, you know, that's not the case. I've never come in here feeling anything but grateful and lucky and honoured. So thank you.
There we are.
Yes,
that's it. Maggie, you really have to be quicker off the mark. Tearful Jonathan Ross bids farewell to the BBC. Maggie, I will give you, you didn't get the answer to the question, but I will give you a chance to.
I knew the answer. I'm being very gentle, yes, womanly, I suppose. Yeah. This is why women never get to the top, obviously.
So he bowed out gracefully, I thought. And he's taking his pram over to the BBC.
Yes.
Over to ITV.
But not till next autumn when everybody's had a chance to just sort of detox themselves, I feel, from this particular presenter. I'm not shedding any tears at all.
I'm sort of with Maggie on this. Sort of think, you know what? He's stopping doing a chat show on one TV channel and he's going to go and do a chat show on another TV channel.
For less money.
Yeah, I don't really... I mean, I think actually the biggest winner out of this is the BBC.
Because he had become a lightning rod for all their problems. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see if...
Who's the new
lightning rod? Yeah. Well, I think it's Mark Byford and his pension. he's my lightning rod for the moment. I'm really bloody annoyed about that. More tombola. It's Maggie, your go. Pick a number.
I'm number seven.
Hi, I'm Piers Morgan, and my DVD tells you why England can't win anything. The good, the gas, and the ugly. Out on DVD now.
Oh, God, I certainly won't be buying it. What is the story about Piers Morgan, though?
Well, he's switching to take over from, who's
CNN.
It? CNN, yeah, CNN.
I get the point there, clearly.
He's going to take over Larry King. What if you think about Piers? He has done a fantastic job.
Well, he's bigger than life, isn't he? I mean, he's a larger-than-life figure. I think he's a great broadcaster. And it's interesting, really, that the Americans warm to him.
Yeah, why do they...
Well, he's a hell, you know, fellow well-met person. He's what you see is what you get. He's brash. He's kind of straightforward. He's naughty. He's kind of English without being posh, and they love an English accent. And he's actually a very good journalist.
Isn't he Simon Cowell light on American television?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to see where they're coming from. But I suppose he's got more, you know, he's more of a sort of a journalistic personality than Cowell, isn't he? Cowell wouldn't be able to hold his own on a chat show.
Not at all. I mean, Piers Cannon, he's coaxed quite a few interesting snippets out of people in his interviews. I think, though, that actually he's got this sort of brashness which sees him through. He seems to be unstoppable, and you need that kind of sense of energy and confidence.
Okay, great. More numbers. Steve, one for you.
Isn't he also, you know, a magnificent self-publicist too, you know, who actually has managed to convince the world that, you know, that Larry King Live is a really important show, whereas actually CNN's chat show has actually not been a really important interview show for quite some time, apart from, you know, the occasional set piece.
But I want his wedding, you know, the simple wedding in Oxfordshire with that little bunch, his darling wife carrying wild flowers. I thought that was very anti-celebrity.
That's bad enough of Piers. Right, well, what number have you got?
His second wedding, yeah? Number four.
Number four, please.
This is the Archers.
Yes, it is the Archers, but that's not the story.
It's the new Radio 4 controller.
Yes, thank you very much, Steve.
I should say, at this point, say that Maggie had tipped from the beginning.
Really?
Is this true? But we all of our bloggers say that we are you know, all over the place on this. It's not true at all.
Well, because did we tip practically everyone in broadcast?
Actually, what we did was we said that Robert Paston had applied and been interviewed for the job, which, that, you know, he had applied and been interviewed
so
for
Mark
the
Lawson.
Job, and Mark Lawson.
Yeah. But what we actually did was we did say accurately from the start that there was no obvious successor, and that was the truth. Oh. And in a way, they have... It's a very interesting thing that Tim Davey...
They appointed an unobvious successor, didn't they?
No, but Tim Davey has made two quite safe pairs of hands. Bob Shannon going back to Radio 2 from an escapade at Channel 4, and now Gwyneth Williams, who was being made redundant.
I see, by the way, that Natalie Schwartz has only just left the board of Channel 4. That's another outrage as well. I sat on a panel with Natalie Schwartz and said publicly, I know I'm digressing now, but I must get this out of my chest.
And you're banging the table.
I said publicly that I challenged her to name a date for the launch of Channel 4 Radio, and then I said it would never launch. And it
absolutely
didn't.
But if you notice, they gave her credit for landing the UK TV advertising deal at Channel 4. And the moment I saw that, I knew that's her ticket out of Channel 4. She just needed a deal.
Anyway, back to Gwyneth Williams. And I hear that people at Radio 4 and BBC Radio, because of course she came from the World Service, were somewhat surprised. You know, very few people have heard of her
Well, that's not true. I mean, she'd been doing a lot of the sort of the worthy programmes and, selecting Reith lectures and all of that kind of stuff. The thing is really that she's not going to be a particularly high-profile figure. She doesn't have a huge amount of confidence. She may be able to get a grip of what seems to me like a very big production arm within Radio 4, where a lot of the commissioners seem to have been sitting there for quite a long time. Mm. And the second thing is I've been trying all week, actually for weeks now, to find out how the Radio 4 budget is broken down by genre of programmes, and they've been unable to provide it. So it's very Radio 4 has some quite murky
opaque
areas.
Yeah.
Yes, it is very murky.
Plus, you don't really want somebody dynamic doing that job, because, you know, if you're too dynamic, you're going to try and move the archers, or, you know, or move the news bulletins, or move that bit of music at 6 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden,
then
you're really
upset.
It's not a job for revolutionaries. It's slow evolution. It said you need 5 years to get into the Radio 4 kind of controllership.
Right. Good luck, Gwyneth. Whose go is it?
I've forgotten now.
Go on, Maggie, you pick one.
I've got number three.
Number three.
Listen, I drove from Newcastle in a taxi to Rothby, cost a lot of money. I brought a dressing gown for him, a big jacket. I brought some chicken, some bread. I know you're going to laugh at this one. I brought my can of lager. I brought him a fishing rod, because I heard he was in the river, and I brought a fishing rod, so when fish together, I'll have a chat with him, talk to him, because I think I'm the only man I think I can help.
So that was Paul Gascoigne speaking to Real Radio about his supposed friend, Raoul Moat. What about the coverage of the Raoul Moat story, Maggie? It's been criticised for being prurient and sensational and Fox News-ish, but, I mean, it was pretty...
It was a pretty amazing story. Yeah. I mean, people always like to get on the bandwagon about it. And, you know, poor man was apparently, you know, he shouldn't have been tasered and all the rest of it. Well, I think it was a pretty good outcome, as she said, rather callously.
God. You wouldn't want to get on the wrong end of Maggie Brown, would you? Definitely not. There's a bit of Daily Mail in everyone, and there's more Daily Mail in Maggie than you would imagine.
As Maggie says, it was one of those fascinating stories that, because it's summer, sort of gets more play than you would expect, and then it dragged on for a lot longer than anybody would expect. So, you know, so all of the outside broadcasters had sent up huge teams to Northumberland, and, you know, and you had Kay Burley stood day after day outside one of those shops in that town, you know, going on for hours. I mean, the weird thing was that the finale to it, I was actually at Heathrow Airport waiting to catch a plane out of the country, when all of a sudden, you know, they started running around as if there was some action going on, and they couldn't really tell you, but you were watching it and thinking, they have found him, they do know where he is now. And by the time I landed in South Africa,
it was all over. Alright, very good, thank you very much. So we're left with number two, so let's hear that.
You're a Nazi because what you're saying is... I find that immensely offensive, you ignorant pig.
Who's that?
John Gaunt.
Yes. So bad week for the Coventry Shock Jock. First he lost his Ofcom appeal about being sacked from TalkSport, and then Sun Talk gave him the boot, didn't they? they've closed down the internet radio station that
Do you remember when he won something like 3 Sony Golds all in one go? It's a bit of a sad decline, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
I mean,
he's a very good broadcaster, really.
We should put a link to the actual interview into the blog that goes with this, though, because this is the most extraordinary piece of journalism. I mean, I'm not sure whether not quite sure whether you should or shouldn't be allowed to do this, but you know, but as a human being, you probably shouldn't, and as a journalist, you probably shouldn't, because he spends the entire interview haranguing the other bloke, who is, you know, quite annoying, but is being harangued.
So it's all over for John Gort. I wonder if he'll pop up somewhere else, Three Counties Radio, perhaps, somewhere like that.
He will pop up somewhere else.
I think he will pop up somewhere else.
And I wouldn't be surprised if it was somewhere else in the Murdoch Empire.
Yeah, that's a possibility, of course.
I mean, the weird thing about that case was the fact that he was being supported in court by
Sami Chakrabarti, Liberty.
The whole thing's weird. You know, and freedom of speech and John Gaunt. And then there was the idea that if he'd won, he would have won by using the European, you know,
the Human Rights Act, which he so despised. very good.
So queer as folk.
Thank you very much. What was that about?
I said, now it's so queer as folk.
Now it's so queer as folk.
That was a Yorkshire reference, I think.
rather than a controversial TV show, which I doubt he'll be in the next series of. Very good. Well, I was keeping score, but quite frankly, who cares? You'll find.
Well, I want a runners-up prize. Prizes for everybody, I say.
Prizes for everybody. Well, I think your prize is merely being here, Maggie.
You started off with points. I mean, prizes at the beginning.
I did.
I think we should rebel.
What are you going to do, Maggie? Walk out.
Had a free cup of tea.
Okay. More on all those stories at MediaGuardian.co.uk. Finally, this week, he created Dead Ringers. He's been a writer on just about every comedy hit on the radio for the last decade, and he's one of the big names on Six Music. He was also, of course, fired from XFM for relieving himself into Dermot O'Leary's desk drawer, and he received his marching orders from Virgin Radio after Ofcom found that it was inappropriate for a 9-year-old to spell out a certain expression, which I shan't repeat, on one of his quizzes. Well, the latest entry on Joan Holmes' CV is a producer credit on Five Live's Men's Hour, the, quote, cheeky younger brother of Jenny Murray's venerable old beast, the name of which escapes me for the moment. The show's been commissioned for a 6-week run. Here's a clip.
Men's Hour with Tim Samuels.
And welcome back. You are listening to Men's Hour with me. It's a little bit like Woman's Hour, but with slightly hairier chest and other things. And we've been discussing in a non-smutty, sociobiological way monogamy and really looking at whether we sort of have a genetic disposition to that. And we'd love to hear your practical tips for keeping faithful, 850-58. In the studio, we have Louis Spence, Hugh Dennis, Andy McNabb, and my therapist, Dr. Mark. And now it's time for Thought for the Gay with writer and stand-up Chris Neal.
Thought for the Gay.
Well, earlier I spoke to John Holmes to find out the thinking behind Men's Hour.
The idea initially came from the presenter, Tim Samuels, who is a sort of Newsnight journalist / culture show presenter. And he's a very good journalist. And he had this idea that men had moved on from where we were in the 90s with the Lad Mags and the Loaded Generation and Nuts and Heat. And I completely agreed with him about that, and I think that's true. And he said, well, you know, there's not really space for this sort of stuff. It's never been broadcast. Men have never talked openly, certainly on the radio, in a sort of woman's hour way. And we never thought, we weren't going to call it Men's Hour at all. That was never the intention. It had a couple of different names, really, but that in the end seemed like the most obvious name. And the premise was, we wanted a sort of intelligent oasis of broadcasting that was skewed towards men and what they thought about issues that they're not normally associated with out loud. We had Andy McNabb talking about his marriages and monogamy and how difficult that can be in the army. We had Hugh Dennis talking about being married twice but being absolutely monogamous. And Louis Spence, you know, we all know Louis Spence's sort of image, but we wanted to get a little bit beneath that. And we did. He kind of opened up. I didn't know, for instance, he'd been in a relationship for 10 years and was also completely monogamous. And he was, you know, he had issues with his body image and he told us about that. So it was a case of getting people to talk about the unfamiliar in an open sort of a way. And the press, you know, you expect that. You're doing a new show. Of course, reviews are going to be mixed in that sense. We're finding our feet. I kind of expected that. It's a live show. Tim's not presented a live radio show before. You know, all of these things in the mix, you know, I pretty much set out to do what we wanted to, yeah.
Why do you think that British radio needs a Men's Hour? I mean, there's no shortage of programmes aimed at men, are there?
Well, they're all blokey, though, aren't they? Don't you think? I mean, you know, Radio 5 has this sort of, as some of our illustrious press colleagues, female columnists pointed out, Radio 5's already called Radio Bloke, yeah. They say. And that's you know, fair criticism. But I think Radio 5 should, you know, certainly be commended for trying something like this out, you know. And I don't, there's nothing like this for men out there, because we absolutely aren't doing gimmicky stuff, you know, like, you know, gadget reviews, and there's nothing about football in it. You know, if we have a sportsman on, they will be talking about something interesting like bringing up kids, you know, and about their something from their life. So it's about familiar people talking about unfamiliar things, and I don't think anywhere does do that on the radio. I think this is kind of new.
Now you're a producer on this show, but you're on air on Six Music and Radio 4. How did you find it being, you know, the other side of the glass?
It's interesting. It's a poacher turned gamekeeper, yeah, in a way. I like producing. I love radio. I grew up, you know, started off on hospital radio when I was 16, and I just have a thing about radio, and radio is my thing. So you can either be a presenter or a presenter producer, but knowing the sort of way radio works and being able to put radio together has always been interesting. On Six Music, anyone who listens to that will know that I cut up a lot of radio and mess about with it. But that is interesting, as you say, being the other side of the glass is interesting, because I find myself, of course, now with that hat on, going, Tim will sort of go, oh, we could do this. And I'm going, there are 100 reasons why we can't do that. And they're mostly to do with the amount of forms I'll have to fill in that I'm not going to fill in. Yeah. So we're not doing it. You know, and it is a different set of sensibilities. But, you know, they complement each other very well. I don't see it as a step... It sounds like a different step away, but actually I see them complementing each other within the same arena, I think.
John Holmes there. If you're still interested, Men's Hour is on 5 Live on Sunday evenings at 7:30. And this Sunday, John Holmes will also be presenting the show that goes out before that too. His Mob Rule starts at 6:30. More details on our blog. Okay, that's the end of our show. But before we go, Maggie and Steve, we want to know you to tell us something you've learnt from the big wider world of media this week. What have you found out?
I was at the St Bride's summer party, and I was talking to the man who, the chief executive of the ABC, and I hadn't realised that they audit the online
figures
site,
for websites.
Yes,
yeah.
And I just hadn't realised that the Times had asked for a 3-month blackout, and that
taken themselves out, haven't they? Yes,
so I said, but what happened if a newspaper wanted to do that with the paper copies? Well, you can't do that. The rules are much laxer for online, and I was quite surprised by that.
Yeah.
So, in other words, no wonder we're in a fog about what's going on, because we don't have audited figures.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you very much, Maggie. Steve, what about you? What have you found out?
Well, I was just thinking when you were playing that clip from Men's Air, and then said it's at 7:30 on a Sunday evening, that, you know, that surely most people who use BBC services and are blokes are watching Top Gear at that point. On the plane over to Johannesburg, Jeremy Clarkson was also on the plane, and he was wearing a T-shirt that he said he was going to wear to the World Cup final that said, I'm not watching Top Gear either.
Very good. Did you go up and ask for his autograph?
I didn't, no.
Lifelong fan? No. Did you ask him about his views on the Times paywall? No, so you missed the story. This is you're a useless media journalist, Steve. Thank you. I should tell you what I learned. Actually, it was producer Ben saw, and he told me, so I learned it. Lee McQueen from I did learn it because he told me about it. It's perfectly reasonable. He saw Lee McQueen from The Apprentice, you know, the one that's what I'm talking about, you know, the one from The Apprentice in the Guardian canteen this week. It seems that he's left Lord Sugar and he's joining the motivational speaking circuit. But if he thinks morale needs boosting in Guardian Towers, he obviously wants to get himself a better agent. Thank you very much to both of you, Maggie and Steve. There are links to everything we've discussed on our blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. And of course, you can get in touch with us through Twitter and Facebook too. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. And it's very good to be back.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.